Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. This is Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And if you have just discovered or stumbled upon this podcast, every week I interview a fascinating musician or musical instrument maker, or maybe just a guitar geek. And we geek out and talk shop and hear their story. This week I am talking to Steve Gunn, the incredible guitarist who's actually featured in the Fretboard Journal 40. If you do not know Steve's work, go ahead, hit pause on this podcast, go over to your favorite streaming app or website or downloading site or however you do it, check out some of his tracks. I personally would recommend Lurker off of his album Time Off for the gentler side of Steve Gunn. And if you want to rock out, listen to the latest Gunn-Trashinsky duo record called Bayhead. That is one of my favorite albums from last year. It is loud, it is wild, it is crazy. And today, I finally got to hear what he was actually playing on that record, and I guess you guys do as well. No sponsors to plug today. I will plug the Fretboard Journal magazine, though, and say that if you have not subscribed to it yet or you want to extend your subscription for a long while, we currently have a 3-year subscription deal for just $99. That equals, of course, $33 per year. You get 12 issues for just $99. This price is only going to be good for about a week longer. It's a special promo thing that we did through the holidays. And if you do subscribe to the magazine, you're going to be able to read about guys like Steve. You're going to be able to read about icons like John Fahey, who we talk about on this podcast. And Steve actually does a pretty good John Fahey impersonation, I thought. You're going to be able to read about a bunch of great builders and luthiers and a lot more. That can all be done at fretboardjournal.com. If you ever have any questions about subscribing, you know how to get a hold of me, jason@fretboardjournal.com. The 41st issue of the Fretboard Journal is just a few weeks away from showing up in mailboxes. I think you will like it. That would be the first issue you would get if you were to subscribe now. And beyond the print magazine, we have a lot of fun stuff brewing over the next couple of months, including a new podcast series or two, some new reader meetups around the country, an event or two. I know we're going to be at the Artisan Guitar Show back east in April, as well as the LeConner Guitar Festival here in Washington State in May, plus a lot more. We are keeping plenty busy, and I'm going to be headed to NAMM in a couple weeks. All right, without further ado, here is my talk with Steve Gunn. If you enjoyed this conversation, if you enjoy the Fretboard Journal podcast, we would love it if you would leave us a review on the Apple Podcast app. And by all means, do subscribe if you want to get all of these weekly episodes. Here's our talk with Steve. Steve, thanks for being here at the Fretboard Journal.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being in the new Fretboard Journal, too.
Yeah, thank you.
I know
I'm such a big fan of the magazine, so it was a sort of thrilling
thank
to
you.
Be in the magazine.
So I know you shared a couple of good guitar stories with James Elkington.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But for folks who maybe didn't read that article, can we talk about you and your life? And
sure,
everything?
Yeah, sure.
So you grew up in the Philadelphia area?
I did, yeah. I grew up in, outside of Philly, western suburbs.
And when did the guitar come into your life?
Teenage years.
Okay.
I was kind of a typical suburban kid. My family was pretty musical. Like my mom and my dad, they kind of came from, the 60s. So music was a big part of their lives. My mom was like a record collector. She collected, soul 45s and she was really into local soul music and went to, because American Bandstand and all that stuff was in Philly, and she had older siblings, and she lived very close to that whole area. So she was aware of the whole scene.
Yeah.
There were these really great radio DJs. One of the, few of them are still around.
Last of the dying.
Yeah. And those guys are just incredible encyclopedias of different versions of songs and labels, smaller labels.
Yeah.
And, my mom recently gave me her 45 collection. It's pretty amazing.
That's awesome.
And similarly, my dad was really into rock and roll and all kinds of different stuff. So I was constantly around music and listening, and just kind of expressed an urge to play. And this is in the late 80s, I think a lot more kids were playing guitar.
Yeah.
It was a thing. And, I was playing sports and stuff, but, you know, playing, getting a guitar and going to lessons.
Yeah.
A lot of kids did it maybe for a few months and then dropped it and, or stuck with it, you know, but yeah, I started doing it. I had a great teacher. There was a great guitar store in my town, my hometown, called Lansdowne. The store is called Tadaro's Music. It's still there.
Cool.
And yeah, kind of like put me on the path, sort of.
And where were you hoping to go with the guitar when you first picked it up? Were you trying to do classic rock or
what? Yeah, I had an older sibling, I had an older sister.
Yeah.
Who, she was really into really cool music. And I was just copying her and borrowing, albums from her. And
sure.
I was really into skateboarding, and that was kind of an outlet to music. You know, a lot of like skate rock and punk rock kind of stuff. So when I first got the guitar, I basically was like just trying to play power chords. But then my teacher was teaching me like, you know, Hendrix licks and kind of classic rock, you know, the typical kind of lesson sort of licks that you learn, I guess.
And you wanted to play, it was in like skateboarding videos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for a while I was just sort of just, you know, turning my little tiny amp up and jumping around.
Yeah.
You
know? And then, after that, did it kind of go punk? Is that where you went, or?
I did that quickly. Like the punk thing, I cycled through that pretty fast. And then as I started getting a little bit, like later in high school, I kind of got into jazz and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of was moving through a lot of different kinds of music. It's funny to think about now, because a lot of people who I knew back then are still into the same kind of like, you know, music. They haven't like veered anywhere.
Yeah.
And for me, I was like kind of just working through all this stuff pretty quickly. And also I really, you know, I'm really like, I was in a very kind of fertile place for music and radio at the time, like Philadelphia.
Yeah.
You know, there's Temple University. They had great, which I ended up going there for college, and they had great jazz programming and great record stores. And, and I was just around all this stuff, and it just kept me moving through. And, you know, it affected my playing. I was, you know, just sort of playing by ear, you know, a lot of different kinds of things, you know.
There seems to be this like very common stepping stone amongst a lot of us, myself included, like going from punk to John Fahey.
Yeah.
And then finding acoustic music. I don't know why that's a universal thing for people between the age of like 38 and 45 or whatever, but
yeah,
it seemed to happen for a lot of us.
It's interesting to like see those signposts, you know, like along the way in that kind of guitar playing kind of trajectory, you know.
Yeah.
I quickly got immersed into like a lot of experimental music, pretty extreme stuff. Now that I think about it,
I really jumped
into this like extreme sort of, you know, reversal of what I had been listening to before. And now that when I look back on it and think about it and try to put it in context, it almost sort of made me feel the same way that I felt when I was like really young. I'd go see like a punk band, and these guys were like menacing, and the music was sort of frightening, and it like was this unknown kind of sort of entity, and it terrified me, but also like, you know, it mystified me. And that's really the stuff that I got very, very heavily interested in. So the experimental stuff kind of did a similar thing where I couldn't understand it, but I wanted to, and it had this effect on me. Also, when I was 18, I was hanging out a lot in West Philadelphia. I ended up moving there the next year, and I ended up seeing the Sun Ra Orchestra play at like a community center.
Nice.
And that concert, particularly that concert, like really, really like just blew my mind. And it, just the fact that I discovered that they were in my like city and playing all over the place. I'd see them playing on the street and playing in different formations. And then I discovered their label and knew that they self-released their albums and they lived in Germantown, and they were these legendary people. It just completely blew my mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just was kind of absorbing all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think similarly, when you talk about Fahey, I think, you know, I was a huge fan of Sonic Youth. And, you know, when you just kind of like scratch the surface and dig a little deeper and into particularly those people and like what they were into and read about some of their influences and learn more about American like music and people who were kind of on the fringes of society, whether making, whether it's whatever kind of music they were making, I think a lot of people were kind of, there was a new interest in that kind of thing, I think, like starting in the 90s.
For sure.
And Fahey was someone who I think was a genius in his, developed his, I mean, of course there's other players who were didn't get as much credit as he did, but, I think, and particularly trying to understand guitar playing and guitar playing and trying to be better, he's a really good person to like methodically think about how he did what he did. And it's, some of it's fairly easy.
Yeah.
You know, so if you kind of like try to decipher what he's doing, if you kind of, if you know the open tunings and it almost like this kind of rediscovery of playing, you know,
yeah,
and it kind of opens up all these different possibilities.
Yeah.
You know, another person too is Sandy Bull, who I kind of discovered those two people, at around the same time.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they of course had their very, very unique kind of styles, but they were pushing things in a similar way, you know?
So was there a moment when you, I imagine you're with your punk hat on, you had an electric guitar, kind of a beater. Like, was there a moment where you're like, I need a good acoustic, this is my path, or?
Yeah. Well, I did. My parents got me an acoustic. Like I think it was for my 16th birthday.
Okay.
And so then, yeah, I kind of just started playing it.
Yeah.
You know,
That's the Guild?
No, it was actually an Alvarez.
Okay.
I still have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice. It's held up.
That's great.
You know, it needs some work, but it's in the case and it's, yeah. I have it, you know? But yeah. And after that, I started buying Guilds. I started looking around, you know, on like local guitar shops. I think this was probably before Craigslist, but you know, in that New Jersey, Philadelphia, New York area, they were around because they were like produced there and stuff.
So you could find them for dirt cheap.
And yeah. $300-$400, you know, it's very solid, built in the '70s, you know?
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Oh, I met John Fahey once.
You did?
When I was like, when I was a teenager, I went to see him. I think I was probably 19 or 20. He played a concert in Philadelphia. This is very towards the end of his life.
And
he was on tour with this band called No Neck Blues Band, who are from New York, who I ended up becoming friendly with later on. But they played a concert in Philadelphia with John Fahey, and John Fahey was there. And he was sitting at the bar by himself, and he had his sunglasses on, and I like kind of, I went up to him and I was like, excuse me, Mr. Fahey, you know, I was like, I just want to say hello and I'm so excited for your concert. And he's like, okay, thank you. Just kind of was like, yes, like that's it. Like I got no time for you, you know?
That's awesome.
And he played the most bizarre set. He basically just played like electric guitar and was like really, really far out.
He did a record with them, didn't they? The No Neck Blues Band, or did they collaborate on something?
I don't know if they ever recorded anything.
Okay.
Maybe. I'm not sure. But
It
was a very interesting
concert.
I was glad I got to meet him because he wasn't alive very much longer after that.
Yeah. And this is sort of obviously it's pre-Craigslist, it's pre-YouTube, where you're kind of figuring out how to play these tunes, the fingerstyle stuff?
I think, it's all pre-YouTube, so what really helped me, and I tell this to a lot of people who kind of, you know, ask me, like, oh, how did you, what can you, like, where did you learn certain techniques? And Stefan Grossman, those Vestapol videos, I had that little that at first I was ordering the VHS versions and then, you know, later DVDs. I guess DVDs and we would swap them with friends and, you know, rewind them again over and over and over again, back and forth. I had Fahey has one. I had one of those. It's pretty funny. He's like sitting in like a record store and he's like, I don't know I don't know what this chord is, but here we go. Like he's just, his sort of descriptions of the songs are hilarious.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was so helpful to see like the split screen and those guys slow it down and talk about it. One of my favorite ones was John Renborn.
Yeah.
Had one.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there were a couple ones that really stuck with me that I watched over and over and over again.
Yeah. So then what was the next move in your music career? Was it on the acoustic side or on the...
Yeah, I kind of went like full-blown acoustic.
Okay.
And this was around, I think, all these sort of things started kind of aligned in this way where this guitar player, Jack Rose,
mm-hmm.
he moved to Philadelphia. And he was in a band before that, and I kind of knew him, but then he moved to Philly, and we worked in the same... this place called Reading Terminal Market,
okay.
which is like a farmer's market. And he worked at the coffee place. I worked at the ice cream place.
Wow.
And we would kind of like hang out and chit chat and stuff. And this was before he made any solo guitar records. And then he sort of like lost his job. Apparently the story goes, he didn't give a cop a free cup of coffee. And that was kind of the rule at the coffee shop. And it's totally, it's like kind of encapsulates Jack. Like he just was like, no, man, I'm not giving, he doesn't deserve it. You know, that kind of thing. You know, he gets fired and he started kind of woodshedding his playing. And I remember him kind of telling me about it. And he's like, yeah, I'm really working on this solo guitar stuff. You know, I'm really learning, you know, my own pieces and I'm going to record a record. And he hadn't really performed that much. And then I saw him play this show and it completely like blew me away.
Wow.
And he was just working really hard at it. And it turns out that he already kind of had this real basic knowledge of the blues because he was playing in like bar bands when he was a teenager.
Yeah.
And I never knew that.
Yeah.
Because he was playing experimental music. He was in a band called Pelt.
Yeah.
And they were kind of doing this like drone experiments and stuff.
Yeah.
And so when I saw him play, it completely just, it blew my mind. And I kind of was on a very similar kind of trajectory, but I couldn't exactly like figure it out. And then just seeing him and kind of being able to pick his brain and get to hang out with him and have some whiskey and just like shoot the, you know, just hang.
Yeah.
It kind of like made me where he had this kind of amazing work ethic.
Yeah.
And he was always like, you know, demanded like respect and not in a bad way. He just was like, look, I'm hitting the road. I'm trying to, you know, I don't want to work at a crappy coffee place. Like, you know, and then eventually I would see him on the road and stuff. And he was always very supportive of me. And I kind of started experimenting with little recordings. I would give them to him and he'd be like so supportive. So knowing him really like pushed me into like acoustic stuff.
And that was just a total coincidence. You guys worked at the same market.
It was a coincidence. Yeah. It was a big place. I had some other friends that worked there too.
Yeah.
It was an interesting time. And also, you know, Jack was like, I guess he's about 10 years older than me. So he knew all these other people that he introduced me to, Michael Chapman.
Yeah.
And also just guys like who ran record labels in Philadelphia, you know, this whole thing just kind of like cracked open.
Yeah.
Kind of getting to know Jack personally and like people that he knew and you know, friends who I grew up with also like, you know, idolized Jack and, mm-hmm. you know, but Jack was just like, just a guy hanging, you know, mm-hmm. but he inspired a lot of us, you know.
Yeah. Had no idea that not giving the coffee to the cop, sort of the butterfly flapping its wings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Caused the storm.
Yeah. Yeah. So after that, I really started trying to get, you know, the whole like fingerstyle thing down.
Yeah.
And I was playing and shortly after that, I moved to New York and through sort of people that also knew Jack, I kind of just started and I still was, you know, kind of experimenting and doing a lot of improvising.
Yeah.
So I was playing with people in New York, just kind of doing open improvisational stuff and. But I was also kind of like doing both, you know, doing a lot of like heavily affected electric guitar and then kind of quietly by myself, I was really working on this acoustic stuff. And then I just kind of recorded, this was also a time when a lot of people were making CDRs and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I recorded like my own little like solo guitar stuff and started giving it away. And then I met a guy who ran a label called Three Load Recordings down in North Carolina, who was like, you know, let's do a solo record. And yeah. I was like, okay. And then I started singing a little bit, and it all kind of
went there,
like shifted from there.
When did the Kurt Vile stuff kick in?
That happened later. Kurt, he and I are from the same town, Lansdowne, Pennsylvania. Oh, okay. And he moved to Boston. I never really, like, I knew who he was from when I was a kid, and I kind of knew he comes from a big family. So I was like, I kind of put two and two together when he started coming back around as like a singer. Mm-hmm. But I didn't meet him. I went to see him in a place at like an art gallery, you know, there was like not that many people there. And I was like, wow, man, like he like was singing these really awesome songs. And,
yeah.
And then like shortly thereafter he started like, you know, getting like, he did a, cause he had a CD out the first time I saw him. And then subsequently, like with a year or two later, he was like on Matador and like,
yeah,
cranking out like great songs and just, you know, hitting the road.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, you know? And so we kind of reconnected like a little bit after that. And I think I was sort of working on my stuff, too. I was kind of trying to develop, I was kind of trying to make like a real song writer-y kind of record, which was the first time I was doing that. And Kurt was just super helpful. He was like, man, it's so good. Like, why don't you come and like open for me? And if you want to like play in my band for a little bit, you're welcome to. I had no idea what I was doing really. And it was not a long, it was like a very short stretch on the tour.
Got it.
But yeah, he's just like really supportive and still is, you know?
And, it didn't make it into the article, but the Gunn Trzynski duo is ridiculously good.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, how did that come about?
That came about when I was talking about being in New York and improvising a lot. There were all these people kind of doing, I don't know, there was like a whole group of people, even like in Europe and across the States, just kind of doing self-releases and experimental stuff and playing in galleries and people's houses. And when I was in New York kind of playing with different people, I met this drummer, John, and we were kind of playing around in different kind of formations with different people, and we started hanging out and like talking about music. And I think he and I, we really wanted to get away from just kind of the open jam, quote unquote, because I was really trying to figure out how to play and like really learn stuff. And similarly, he was really practicing playing drums, and we started getting together as a duo, and I kind of had these like, you know, pieces, and we developed these pieces together, you know. And we developed, I mean, they were sort of like expansive, but they had parts, you know, like there was these songs that had like 10 different sort of movements and parts, you know, and like it got really specific all like very quickly. And we just really, and also we just really learned how to play together. You know, we played a lot, you know, we had our rehearsal space, and we were just like four or five times a week, we'd just be like playing for hours, you know. And that's really when I kind of got a little bit better as a player, like as a live player. And also I just, you know, kind of was able to like figure out ways to come up with like songs and stuff like that. So we recorded a record up in upstate New York with this guy Jason Marr, who had this studio called Black Dirt Studio for a long time. I think he's about to shut it down for a minute. And yeah, we just, and then after that, we made the first kind of duo record. And then I was like, stepped into, okay, like from these duo-ish ideas, I'm going to write these songs and I'm going to just like sing these songs. And then that was like the first record, like an actually like realized songwriting record. It was called Time Off. This label, Paradise of Bachelors, put it out. And that was the first time I was like, okay, like I want to kind of sing. I want to be like a singer and do the similar stuff that I was doing before, but you know, turn it into songs. But John, we've been playing together ever since, really. I mean, he's played on all my records, and
Do you guys play out with it?
We just did. We just played like two nights ago. It was the first time in a long time.
Okay. Yeah,
in years. And I had never played the songs that are on the new one, so it was like the first time I was playing those. And
did they just stretch and go?
Yeah, they're stretched out. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty, at this point, it's pretty experimental. I have, you know, like I play through like a Fender Twin and have all these effects and I can like do feedback stuff and
yeah,
he's, you know, doing his thing. So it's kind of weaves in and out of all these different sort of ideas, you know?
So on that last record, the duo record, mm-hmm. what did you actually, I'm curious, like what did you actually bring to the studio in terms of gear? And then where is your mind at? Like, are you sober when you do these?
Yeah. I'm definitely sober. Maybe I have like a glass of wine or something.
Okay. But, okay. Subdued.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm, not smoking any herb or anything like that.
Okay.
In the studio. That makes me slightly paranoid. But yeah, I mean, we weren't like getting too loose. I mean, it was pretty, we were obviously getting loose with the music, but, we weren't like drinking bottles of tequila.
Sure.
Like, but that particular record, we recorded it. I was on tour with Lee Ronaldo from Sonic Youth and I was kind of picking his brain about, you know, they have this amazing studio in Hoboken called Echo Canyon West. And, I asked him, I was like, cause John and I had been like, man, we got to do another duo. Cause I made a record for Matador Records and I did a bunch of touring and I was kind of home and like wanted to just loosen up a little bit.
Yeah.
So that record is just me like kind of letting it all go,
yeah,
you know? And I booked a few days at Echo Canyon, through Lee and mm-hmm. we just went over there and knocked it out in a couple of days.
Like, is that still filled with like all of Sonic Youth gear?
There's a lot of cool stuff there. Yeah. It's really cool.
And what guitars on that record? Or are there
that
several?
I have, I went to this guitar store in Los Angeles called Old Style Guitars.
Yeah, we're friends with Ruben.
Yeah, Ruben, yeah.
Yeah, he does a ton of work for us.
Oh, cool. Yeah, and I wasn't even in the market, you know.
That's how it goes at that store.
I know, and I was tinkering around with this old Hawaiian guitar from the 30s. You know, it had like the painting of like the hula girl on it.
Yeah, sure.
Totally faded. But Ruben had put flat wound strings on it and this really cool pickup. Uh-huh. And I was like, I played it through like a Fender Princeton.
Yeah.
And it sounded like an oud.
Yeah.
It just had this like super cool tone and it felt really great. And I was like, ah, damn it. I got to buy this thing. So, and it was cool because it was like, it had a case. It was pretty small. I was in a van that we drove across the country and we were driving back. So I was like, I think it can fit, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I bought it from Ruben and that's the acoustic that I use on the record. It's a really fun little like guitar to play.
Yeah.
And I'm almost, if you listen to the record, I'm kind of doing this like oud-ish for lack of a better term, style of playing.
Yeah.
You know? And electric, I have this guitar that a friend of mine, Brian Huron, made. He lives in North Carolina and he's a luthier and he does repairs and he builds guitars. He mostly builds electric guitars and it's called Fret Sounds.
Okay.
And he made this Strat for me.
Okay.
That's, you know, kind of customized to what I needed. And that's what I have been playing. Like, I've been playing that a lot lately, but that's the guitar that I used for that record.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt, but Lee had these amazing amps. He had this deluxe that he got when he was on tour with Crazy Horse.
Okay.
Like when Sonic Youth went on tour with Neil Young.
Sure.
And he was like, there's this amp that Neil uses, like, you know, and one of Neil's like roadies basically told Lee like, hey man, there's like another one of those amps and if you want it, you can buy it.
Yeah.
You know, and Lee like has it at the studio and I was like playing through that. And then also like a Blackface Deluxe 2 or I can't remember, or like a Princeton. I can't remember. I was playing through two amps at once.
Yeah.
But that the one amp was that one, the other one, the Neil Young one.
Nice.
So it's just great. You know, they just have like such cool stuff there.
Yeah. And you brought a couple acoustics here for the little video session we did, but you also brought a Champ.
Yeah, 66 Champ.
And so,
that I put in a suitcase.
Yeah.
I had an 80-pound suitcase.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Which was really not the smartest idea.
Okay.
I got charged a lot of money. But I put, yeah, those effects and that Champ in there.
So how does it work? You've got a Martin here, and then you've got a plain view, which you'll have to explain what exactly that is.
Okay.
Go for it.
That is a guitar that my friend Raymond made. He works at a guitar shop in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Called Acoustic Music Works.
Yeah. And so Raymond Morin, right?
Raymond Morin, yeah.
Yeah.
And I went in that store with Lee, actually. We were on the road, and we went in there. And I sort of know him just from, he plays in a band, and he's a great guitar player.
It's on Instagram.
In his own right, yeah. And we were just chit-chatting, and I know that he has been making guitars, and he was making a similar guitar for my friend Nathan Salzberg.
Yeah.
And we were kind of just playing guitars that were in the shop and chit-chatting, and I was checking out his workshop and stuff, and you know, I think he was, you know, we were just like talking about the new Waterloo mm-hmm. guitars and how they became a big hit. After,
yeah. I think you know, they've been big for Collings. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and rightfully so. They're really cool.
Yeah.
I like the tone and, you know, they're light, you know, kind of almost like the old Recording King
for
guitars.
Sure.
And I just think that style is so cool, you know?
Yeah.
And he, Raymond told me that he was making a similar sort of model. And that was it. I was like, man, I would love, because I really like, you know, buying guitars from people you know, that people who make guitars, and really knowing what they're actually, how the process, like bit to bit, like knowing exactly what they're doing. And it's so cool to, you know, give them the down payment and keep in touch with them and, you know, to support what they're doing. And, you know, I think he also was, you know, very generous. He was like, putting in little extra like fine touches and stuff like that. And,
yeah. Did you have any preferences on this guitar in terms of like what you need for your playing?
It's my first 12 fret guitar.
Okay.
And I wanted to try that just to have a different sort of option, you know? And I mean, I think that guitar particularly it's not good for any kind of low open tunings. Mm-hmm. And occasionally I'll cheat and use a capo.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more just kind of like, I had maybe a wider fretboard, like slightly,
mm-hmm.
you know, those kinds of like small kind of requests.
Yeah.
But I kind of let him, you know, I saw the model that he had started for Nathan, and I was like, man,
just do that.
So I've been really happy with it. It's really, really fun to play.
Yeah. And then the Martin here is what?
This is a 0018.
Yeah.
And it's from like 2014 where they did a version where they did scallop bracing.
Yeah.
Where they, I guess it was like, I don't know, this is like a special edition or something like that. Where the bracing's like a little bit more detailed.
Sure.
And I bought this. I finally figured out that a 0018 was like the model that I needed after like
a lot of trial and error.
Okay. And I was like, oh man, you know, just because of the tone, like the sort of, cause I play finger style. So it was like, I had a very kind of great mid range.
Yeah.
Not too bassy. I was playing a lot of like D35s and stuff that were like heavy.
Yeah.
A little bit heavy. And I just found it on Craigslist. And this guy had a friend who was like a guitar dealer, and he was like a church player.
Okay.
He had two of the same ones, and I hit him up. Seems like very reasonable price.
Yeah.
Met him in Guitar Center, gave him the cash in Guitar Center. Which I thought was pretty funny.
That is funny.
Behind
the clerk, like in front of the clerk, or where were you in there?
So we were out because he lived in Jersey, and you know, I live in Brooklyn, and we were trying to figure out where to meet.
Yeah.
You know, to do the transaction. I didn't want to like do it out in the street or anything. Yeah. And he's like, well, huh? You know, he's like, I'm like, And then he said, why don't we just meet at Guitar Center? I was like, okay. And he's like, okay, I'm the guy with like the sun, you know, he had like glasses and a leather jacket.
All right.
So I was like, saw the guy with the guitar case and we did the transaction like amidst all the people testing.
Glasses
there.
And a leather jacket. That could be a lot of people at most guitar centers.
True. Yeah, I know. Yeah. But he had a guitar case.
That's true.
So it was funny. We just like, I like opened the guitar and tried it out in Guitar Center and then gave him the money. And
that's hilarious.
It was really funny. But I didn't want to drop a lot of money. I wanted a guitar that I could tour with.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of kick around and fly with, you know, and not worry about. So this has been great to me. It needs a little bit of work. It's a good working guitar, you know.
People wonder why Guitar Center is struggling. It's because people are buying and selling guitars inside Guitar Center. They have nothing to do with them.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's all right. It's the first time I've heard that story.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked about these as acoustic guitars, but...
I wouldn't do that in like... Acoustic Music Works or anything like that. Yeah. Only Guitar Center.
They wouldn't let you.
Yeah, that's a disclaimer. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
So what are you... I mean, we're talking about these guitars as acoustic guitars, but you're plugging them into a Champ. What are you using for a pickup, and how are you making this line work?
So I basically have a pedal board in that bag over there.
Yep.
And And I also have a DI.
Yep.
The radial DI, it's called the Tone Bone.
Mm-hmm.
So I use a DI and then I go into that Champ. So I plug the guitar into a DI and then I have an out going into my pedals.
Okay.
The pedals are going into the amp. So I can kind of do like textural stuff as well as like straight acoustic.
Yeah.
A lot of times I request like a condenser as well. So I have like the acoustic tone, the natural acoustic tone, mm-hmm. kind of blended with that kind of stuff. But particularly when I play solo, I like to kind of, you know, kind of sometimes do like soundscapey sort of things and improvise and mess around with different effects and stuff like that. So, but that
pickups in these, or no? Or
just yeah, that yeah. There's a bags in that.
Okay, in the plain view.
In the plain view, and then in here there's a Fishman like Matrix pickup.
And you're not having any feedback or anything weird?
When I play with a band, I have like I put like a little feedback buster thing in there just because it's with monitors and stuff. It gets a little bit nutty.
Yeah.
But not when I play solo. No. Sometimes I'll do like just a straight up acoustic solo show, but
yeah,
I like to kind of mix it up.
You definitely do like to mix it up.
Yeah,
that's what I appreciate about you.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, yeah, I never know what your next record will sound like or what side of the spectrum it'll be on.
I just finished a new record. I'm finishing it soon. I just recorded track like a whole new record.
And is that a quiet record or a loud record?
It's a song record that's going to be out on Matador this year at some point.
Nice.
Yeah.
Any theme or just kind of?
It's similar to it's a different. I don't know. I think. Well, I did a lot of touring solo, performing solo, singing, and I think that kind of had, I'm like kind of stepping out. The last record was like way heavy band record, like a lot, like a whole web of all this guitar playing and like, you know, big sounds. And this one is a little bit like stripped down in that regard and a little bit vocally forward.
Nice.
And yeah, I hooked up with Tony Garnier, who plays with Dylan. Just kind of by chance, and he ended up coming into the studio and playing on all the songs, and he was such a cool guy to work on a record with, you know. It was amazing. And I, you know, played with this jazz drummer, and James Elkington is producing it, and he's, you know, playing all kinds of stuff on it, so it's been really fun.
Great.
Yeah, so I'm keeping busy.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Thanks for being in the Fretboard Journal 40 and
playing. My pleasure. Thanks.